I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FN Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us on the remainder of this Thursday morning. As I said, 251-343-0101 to discuss anything we were talking about this morning. Joining us now on the line, she is running for House District 96. That's Spanish Fort, Daphne, the north part of the Eastern Shore there, running for that state legislative seat in the Republican primary. Danielle Duggar joins us on the line. Danielle, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. First off, you're running here. I guess tell us about yourself and why you're running.
Sure. I'm a mom. I'm a teacher. I'm a historian of American history. And, you know, I love God. I love this country. I love our state. And I'm just really passionate about the issues. That's the reason why I'm doing this. I'm passionate about protecting our people from rising taxes, government overreach, and violations of our constitutional rights.
So, an educator, you see this a lot in this realm of politics, but what would you describe your views on that as? Are you one of these school choice or some of these divisive concepts or whatever? That these are things that we need to really be concerned about as far as education goes in the state?
Yes, absolutely. So to be fair, I teach English and reading ACT prep, so I'm not in the schools all day during the day. I teach on nights and weekends. But as a historian, you know, this is something I studied in grad school, CRT. You know, as a historical interpretation, you know, performed in grad school, if they want to do that, that's fine. But as applied to K through 12 education, it's just entirely inappropriate. Students aren't, you know, it's not developmentally appropriate for that age group to try and grasp a concept like that. It's an interpretation of historical literature. It's not really meant to be applied to our K through 12 public education system. And school choice is something I'm passionate about. You know, we've got to get competition amongst these school systems. That's the only thing I believe that's going to bring up our performance. It's going to, you know, just improve our school systems if they're having to compete for those, you know, students and for those tax dollars. If we allow, in addition to, you know, opening the district lines and allowing that type of choice, if we allow parents to have a tax abatement or a tax credit that they can take their money and go to private school or homeschool with those tax dollars, I believe that's also going to, bring about competition amongst school systems. And it's what the parents want. I think as the legislators, we need to listen to what the people want.
Well, we'll talk, thinking that you ought to go after your opponent directly or anything, but I would ask it like this. The status quo, you have an incumbent there in Matt Simpson, and do you see that the status quo not really being the way the legislature is conducting business right now as being acceptable, as being satisfactory, that we need to change it up some?
I think there's always room for improvement. You know, personally, I feel like the legislature did not address some critical things that I was hoping they would address this session. Number one on my heart is medical freedom. You know, I felt like SB9 provided some protections for the private sector. It primarily protected those government offices and public positions. But for the private sector, they did not have permanent protections in place that would allow them choice when it came to the vaccine mandates. We didn't have choice for our children with masking in schools. You know, we didn't pass the bill that would allow physicians the right to prescribe off-label medication. These are all health freedom issues that I'm passionate about. You know, and back on the school subject, passing the Numeracy Act, I felt like was a disservice to, you know, the state of Alabama. I mean, I know that they feel like we need to do something, right? Because our education, the state of our education is so poor right now. But passing the Numeracy Act, that's going to cost, I think it was estimated about 140, I've heard different numbers, $1 million a year to employ these 700 math coaches throughout the state to try and save Common Core math standards. I know they don't call it Common Core math. It's the Alabama College and Career Ready Standards. However, they're nearly identical. We're trying to teach these K-5 students these difficult to understand concepts of why 1 + 1 = 2 instead of focusing on memorization, which we've always done. So they're spending a lot of money to try and help assist these teachers teaching this Common Core type math to our students rather than investing that money in education where we could maybe reduce classroom size, which is something I hear from a lot of teachers that they want. They want to reduce these classroom sizes. Obviously, they want more money, you know, more income. Those are things that would help them better educate their students.
Let's walk
through. So there's always room for improvement. I think there were some things we could have gotten better, of course.
Sure. But let's walk through this. This may be you may be the perfect person to talk to about this, the Common Core concept versus what we've always done. When I grew up memorizing multiplication tables, and then later in life, you kind of figure out, you know instinctively because of your memorizing your multiplication tables that 2 × 2 = 4. But when you get a little older, you think about it and you understand why 2 × 2 = 4. And that is sort of, it's, we call it Common Core, trying to understand the why. But you think the best way you teach at a fundamental level is just get kids to know that 2 + 2 = 4, or you know, that is just something that is instinctual, and then we'll get to the kind of the science of math, or why, or the laws of, right? Is that kind of, you lay the groundwork and then you get to more of an understanding of it?
Yes, that's the way education has always gone. K-5, that's developmentally appropriate for them to learn through memorization. What do you do in school? You learn nursery rhymes. You learn songs. You say the Pledge of Allegiance. You learn through memorization, through repetitive acts. Even, you know, children preschool age, they like to watch the same shows over and over. They like to sing the same songs over and over. And it's not because they're obsessed with one thing. It's because that's how their brain learns. So we learn through memorization in that K-5 age range that's developmentally appropriate. And then when we're older, we start to learn the concepts behind these things that we just have, you know, ingrained into us in our early childhood. So, you know, in college, in my undergrad, I did basic concepts of elementary math 1 and 2. And these are courses, they might have changed the names, you know, over the course of, it's been, gosh, almost 20 years since I took those classes, but I'm sure it's the same principle. You learn these concepts behind these basic additions, subtraction, multiplication, problems that you then understand how it works and why it works, and then you teach that to your students. You don't teach them the how and why, but you teach them to memorize and how to do it, and then later on, as an educator, you learn those concepts. So we're trying to teach those kind of difficult to grasp concepts that we learn in our post-secondary education to K-5 students. It's just inappropriate. There was that big federal push, you know, we've got to get our kids competing globally. We've got to compete, you know, with China in math. And the only way to do that is to start teaching these concepts at an early age. But that's really backward. That's not how the human mind learns, and it's developmentally inappropriate. So if we're spending all this money to try and salvage these Common Core standards, it's wasted when we could better invest that money elsewhere and improve education.
It's interesting you explain it that way, because I don't think a lot of people really, you hear Common Core and Common Core is bad, and we've seen the examples, but it's just a kind of a fundamental concept that, I get what Common Core is, the way the mind works, or when it develops, and the way you arrive at, 10 plus 8 is 18 or whatever, but that's not as important as, like you said, it's just like learning nursery rhymes or learning to tie your shoe. You don't really, you tie your shoe because you memorize it and it works, but you don't need to understand why the knots work like they work just yet. you get there. Ultimately, and I don't think anybody. So do you have a lot of people that will come on and talk about how bad Common Core is, but they don't. They really struggle to explain why it's bad, I think.
Yeah, and it's just not something that a lot of people have studied, or maybe they. I've talked to a lot of people. I've studied this. I'm a historian, so I'm big on research. Like, that's what I'm trained to do. So, I've done the research, I've talked, I've looked at all different sides of it. There was the push federally. There was, some interest in curriculum sales. They are going to make money when you're selling all new curriculum to every state in the country. So that's something I'm passionate about, blocking that federal overreach coming down into our state. State overreach at times too, like, we don't have necessarily the protective legislation in place, I think, to protect our people, say, for the next COVID lockdown or the next pandemic or the next crisis. We can't violate our constitutional rights just because we have an emergency. We went through two world wars without those emergency powers of the governor. We got through it without lockdowns, without government forced closures of businesses, forced closures of churches, forced vaccinations of the people. We've got to protect our people from that type of legislation, because we might not always have conservative leadership. And we've seen what these Democratic run states have done. Complete lockdowns. Schools are still closed. It's frightening, the laws that they're passing in some of these states. So we've got to get protective legislation on the books that will protect us regardless of who's in power.
Joined by Danielle Duer, running for House District 96. That's Spanish for it. That's Daphne running in the Republican primary there. Danielle, since you kind of go to is education here, what do you make of the AEA these days? Always as a Republican, they were the enemy when the Democrats were in charge. They kept, I think, extended Democrats an extra couple of cycles their rule in Montgomery. But they seem to be making a comeback here. And when we talk about that, I mean, that could be, I don't know that we're ever going to go back to what the AEA once was in this state. But it's got a lot of people concerned, and that you will put the emphasis on what's good for the teachers and not necessarily what's good for students. What do you think about that?
I would definitely always do what's best for students. I believe parents need to have choice. I believe we need to do what's best for our students' interests. I heard Terrell speaking earlier about this, that, the party discourages funding from that group. And if that's the case, there's got to be a reason why. So I would just be cautious. I would always act in the students' best interest, and I would just do what, I would want to vote the way my people in my district want me to vote. And I would caution the state against any special interest groups. I don't believe that, these groups should have that much power in Montgomery.
And the one thing that a lot of people would think, they're standing in the way of school choice. You mentioned Representative Sorrell. He's predicting school choice in this upcoming quadrennium or legislative session, I guess, 2023. What do you think about the school choice proposals on the table? Do you find them to be a positive thing, or do you have some other thoughts on that?
Well, I know there was one, it didn't pass, but it had kind of strings attached. You know, it was, you can have your tax dollars, but there are strings attached. You have to do, if you're homeschooling, you have to, I believe it was, take standardized testing with the state and possibly curriculum review. I don't recall exactly what it said, but I remember there were some strings attached that homeschool groups were concerned about. So I would want to have, you know, I hope Sorella's right. I hope that we do get school choice passed. And like I said earlier, I would love to see district lines open up and we have that type of school choice for these parents who are stuck in maybe a underperforming school system, who don't have the means to go to a private school or to homeschool. They have the choice to drive their student to a better performing school, maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes away, in addition to giving a tax credit or tax abatement with no strings attached. So if you're going to allow the parents to take that money and homeschool with it, you cannot regulate how they homeschool. That defeats the purpose of people educating their children at home.
Danielle,
they want control.
Danielle, we're up against a break here. Real quick before we have to go, tell people they can find out more about your campaign, more about your candidacy, or anything else.
Sure. Thank you so much. You can go to danielleduggar.com. That's D-U-G-G-A-R. I've got my telephone website, or I'm sorry, email address listed on there. And I have a Facebook page, Danielle Duggar for Alabama House District 96.
Y'all check that out. Danielle, thanks for making time for us this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.